Today's reading is from Exodus chapter 14, and it's found on page 71 in the Pew Bibles. Crossing the Sea. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and camp near Pir Hereth, between Migdol and the sea. They are to camp by the sea, directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord." So the Israelites did this. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, "What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services." So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites, who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea, near Pir Hereth, opposite Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen." When the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew, then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to the one side and light to the other, so neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He made the wheels of their chariots come off so that they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing towards it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen. The entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea, not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses his servant. Thanks be to God.
We are continuing the series based on Hebrews chapter 11, and I believe you looked at Moses and his calling last week when I was away. I haven't had a chance to listen to it, but today we're thinking about Moses leading the people out of Egypt, and this is what it says in Hebrews chapter 11, starting at verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be ill-treated along with the people of God, rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the application of blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. So, when I was a bit younger, I used to dabble with a bit of surfing. And there were a few occasions when I went out in some pretty big waves. We would do an annual trip down to Cornwall in the summer and go out with a few friends. And sometimes we went out and the sea was... the surf was quite high, and beyond the limits of my very mediocre ability. And if you've been surfing, you will know that as you're paddling out through the breakers to find that perfect wave that you can catch, often you can ride over the top of the waves before they break. You can sort of bob over the top of the swell. But sometimes you get to that moment where you get a big wave that's clearly about to break on top of you. And at that point, what a good surfer will do is they will sort of duck underneath the wave and come out the other side. What I do is I just sort of get smashed by the wave, turned upside down, and completely wiped out. And this used to happen on a fairly frequent basis. And if you're out in a big surf, there's this moment where you sort of see this 5-foot wall of water looming above you, and there's this moment of fear when you anticipate it's just going to come smashing down on top of you, and you're just waiting for the inevitable to happen. And that gives me, I guess, just a tiny insight into what it must have been like with these walls of water either side of you, as the Israelites were walking through the parted Red Sea. Obviously, it's nothing like it, but it must have been pretty scary, I would imagine, to be standing on that dry seabed with these gigantic walls of water to your left and your right. And, pretty amazing, pretty incredible, but definitely, I think, frightening as well. And sometimes we're called into situations that are very challenging and very frightening. And sometimes we're called into positions of leadership, like Moses was, and we have to lead other people through situations that are very challenging and very frightening. And it's unlikely that you're going to be called to lead a nation of people across a seabed, but whatever you're called to do, you might not really be qualified to do it. And you might not have the confidence in your ability to get through it. And so how do you deal with that situation? And we know about Moses that he was a very reluctant leader. It's interesting, I think, in the Bible, actually, God often seems to choose leaders who are reluctant or unlikely, like people like Moses and Gideon and Samuel, who was just a boy in the temple when he was called. And you think of King David, he was the youngest of a load of brothers, and the youngest one was the one that was chosen. Isaiah, the prophet, was reluctant and didn't feel that he was qualified. But God chose these people to be leaders, and they heard God's call and they obeyed him. And that's essentially what Moses did. We know that Moses had this burning desire to help his people. We know that when he saw the injustice of the way the Egyptians were treating the Israelites, that he was burning with anger about it. And he gave up the privilege of the life that he had had in Egypt, miraculously through the circumstances of his birth and then being taken by Pharaoh's daughter out of the river when he was put in the little basket amongst the bulrushes. And we do know that he was identifying with the suffering of his people, the Israelites, and he wasn't content just to sit back and do nothing. But we also know that when God did call him at the burning bush, he made a lot of excuses. He didn't want to be the leader. He didn't feel he was the best man for the job. He wasn't very good at speaking. But God sees beyond what we see, and he sees what people can do through his power, not of their own ability. So just setting the scene, and what else do we know as we approach this this passage that we read this morning? We know that Pharaoh had brutally suppressed the Israelites. The Egyptians had used harsh, forced labor. They were slaves. And Pharaoh had introduced a systematic campaign of infanticide. They were killing the Israelite baby boys. And I think that's actually an important thing just to note and make sure we get the timetable clear on it, because the passage that Sue read to us this morning does throw up some difficult and some challenging questions for us concerning the way that God treats Pharaoh. So it talks about God hardening Pharaoh's heart, God making Pharaoh be stubborn and say, actually, I don't want to let the Israelites go, and I'm going to go and get them. But the timing, I think, is important there. Before there's any suggestion that God has hardened Pharaoh's heart, we already know that Pharaoh's revealed his true nature, because he's shown us the extreme lengths that he's prepared to go to in order to crush the Jews. Now, that's a story that we've seen over history at various times. But Pharaoh did some pretty terrible things before the Bible tells us God hardened his heart. It's later on that we read that God hardened his heart. We'll think about that a bit more later on, but I just wanted to get that issue of timing straight. So let's think about the crossing of the Red Sea. So the Israelites have finally been let go. Repeatedly, Moses has gone to Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh has refused. And we read there as well, actually, that God had hardened Pharaoh's heart at that point. But eventually, there's these 10 plagues, and they end with a very dreadful plague, the death of the firstborn in all of the families and of the animals. And at that point, Pharaoh relents, and he lets the Israelites go. But very quickly, he changes his mind about that. So the Israelites have walked out of Egypt. They've walked to the banks of the Red Sea. But Pharaoh changes his mind. We know it's not entirely his own doing. We know that God has hardened his heart again in order to demonstrate his glory to the Egyptians. And that is a thorny problem, but as I said, the timing is important. So we may look at that and say, well, that seems difficult to reconcile to the idea of a just God, a loving God. He made Pharaoh do that. But let's consider the context. So, as I said, Pharaoh had already demonstrated his character. And when you read through Scripture the whole account of Moses and the Israelites in Egypt, it seems that before there's any suggestion that God has actively intervened to harden Pharaoh's heart, it's clear that Pharaoh has already made a lot of very bad choices, and he's set his heart firmly against God and God's people. So in that sense, Pharaoh's already condemned himself for his own actions. Now, that doesn't mean that he's beyond forgiveness. Nobody's beyond forgiveness, and there are biblical examples of complete tyrants who've done terrible things who've received God's forgiveness. But I think the important thing is that God doesn't owe us anything. He didn't owe Pharaoh anything, and he doesn't owe us anything. He freely forgives out of his mercy and out of his grace, but we are not deserving of that, and God is not under any obligation. And that, as it applies to you and me, applied to Pharaoh too. And what happened to Pharaoh, it puts me in mind of a verse that's in Romans 1, in which it says of people that God gave them up to the sinful desires of their hearts. God gave them up. And the sense is that God, men abandoned God and created their own gods and did their own things, went their own way, followed their own desires. And ultimately, God said, okay, and gave them up to their own sinful desires. So men abandoned God, and then God abandoned them. And that's a really, it's sobering and it's challenging. But it should be a warning to us as well, shouldn't it? God's not mocked. He's gracious and he's willing to forgive, but we can't endlessly try his patience and just expect that he will always forgive us. And if we've got that mindset where we think, well, we can do what we like and we can sin and we can do whatever we want and it's our will, not his will, and we just expect that he will forgive us because it's his duty, then we're on very dangerous ground. Christians, by nature, we should want to stop sinning. We should want to do God's will. We shouldn't have that mindset where we can keep on doing whatever we like and our will comes first and it's okay because God's going to forgive us. If that is your view, then I think you're badly mistaken and you could be in for a rude shock as well. God is gracious, but God's not a pushover. And that's what's happened with Pharaoh. So Pharaoh has willfully set himself up against God's people. He's made himself into a god, if you like, and he's defied the living God. And God's decided to make an example of him. And we might complain that his treatment of Pharaoh doesn't seem fair, but Pharaoh's actions were certainly not fair on the Israelite mothers whose children were murdered. And when you stop to think about it, I don't think you can argue that God's treatment of Pharaoh wasn't just or wasn't fair. You can't say that he didn't get what he deserved. Now, we could go on talking about that subject and the wider ramifications of that issue for a long time. But I think if anyone wants to talk about it later on, I'd be happy to. But let's move on to Moses. So Moses was this reluctant leader. He's called by God to lead his people out of Egypt. He's the one who did the negotiation with Pharaoh, with Aaron there to help him speaking. And ultimately he's led them out. through the wilderness, and we find them camped by the Red Sea with the Egyptian army in hot pursuit, which is obviously a very sticky situation to be in. And the way the Israelites react, we read, is that they start to complain. Why did you take us out of Egypt? Did you bring us here to die? It would be better for us to stay in Egypt rather than die here in the desert. Is it because there were no graves in Egypt? A lot of complaining going on. And being a leader isn't very easy, especially when you have to lead people through difficult circumstances. So Moses has given up a lot for them, remember, and he's done a lot, and he's trusted God, he's obeyed him, he's done what he's been asked, and he's led them finally out of Egypt. But the minute that things seem to take a turn for the worse, they start to blame him and complain. But to be fair, imagine that you're in that situation. You're trapped between the Red Sea and the Egyptian army, not knowing what's going to happen, expecting that you're about to be caught and killed by the army. I can imagine that some of us might react in the same way. So in the situation, what does Moses do? We know the story well. God speaks to him. God, first of all, provides the pillar of flame to protect the people. And then God speaks to him and says, hold out your hand over the sea. And he does it. And what happens next? The sea parts, and then the people are able to walk through. And how does Moses address the people in that situation? He says, fear not, stand firm, the Lord's going to fight for you. And it says you only have to be silent. Basically, you do nothing. The Lord's going to fight for you. So don't get scared. Stand firm and trust in God, because he's going to fight for you. And that's good advice for all of us, I think, when we find ourselves in a tight spot. We read in Hebrews that it says, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who was invisible. By faith he kept the Passover. By faith the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land. But when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. So it's by faith. That's what set Moses apart, along with all of those other people we've read about in Hebrews 11. He didn't actually have to do that much himself. He just had to go and raise his staff up and follow the simple instructions that were given to him. So how did Moses cross the Red Sea? By faith. God came between him and the Egyptian army and the pillar of fire to shield the Israelites. Moses raises up his staff and stretches his hand over the sea. And then God sends the strong wind to create a path through the sea. And Moses is able to lead the people across the dry seabed. That's how he got across. He didn't have to devise a cunning strategy. He didn't have to improvise a boat to sail across. He didn't jump or he didn't fly. He walked across. And he walked across because God made the path for him. God performs the miracles. We don't.